All right, I promised you, and I'm going to deliver. Last week on our episode of Return on Podcast, I walked you through some of the basics of calculating your landed cost of goods sold as an Amazon seller or e-commerce brand owner. And I promised, and I want to make good on that promise, this week to bring on my best expert on inventory reconciliations. Guys, as we get to the end of 2023, we're launching into 2024, right? One of the most scary, let's be real, guys, you've been putting this off for like 6 months because you don't want to do it. That task has been to true up, reconcile, adjust, they all kind of mean the same thing, your inventory, so that when you go to file your taxes or when you go to make sure your profit and loss is accurate, it actually is accurate. And, you know, it's really one of the most complicated things that we do here at Seller Accountant. And therefore, if you're doing your own accounting out there, it's one of the most complicated things you do as well. And so Savannah, who's on my team, she's our director of operations, and she has weeded through the most ridiculous and crazy inventory challenges, so much so that she's really been able to put together a guide that we're going to offer to you to help you kind of quickly troubleshoot what might be going on with your inventory. And so I hope you enjoy this conversation. It's about 25 minutes of me and Savannah kind of walking through, okay, but what happens if my inventory is wrong in this direction? Okay, but what happens if it's wrong in the other direction, right? And so this one's going to be really easy to consume audio if you're listening to this in the podcast feed, because we're not really going to show you anything on the screen. Or it's going to be easy to watch this on the YouTube channel because you'll just see us interact in the normal kind of StreamYard environment like we do for most of my interviews. So without further ado, this is Savannah Dixon from Seller Accountant talking about inventory reconciliations and adjustments. Let's dive in. It's time to maximize profitability and cash flow. It's time to learn habits and hacks from the best e-com CEOs. It's time for Return on Podcast with me, Tyler Jeffcoat. All right. And today I have a very special guest on Return on Podcast, Savannah Dixon. Savannah, as I teased up in the intro, you're a core part of our leadership team here at Seller Accountant. And so unusual versus some of the guests we bring on here in that I actually know you really well. And I've had a Christmas party together recently and spent entirely too much time together doing planning last week as a leadership team. But how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for making time. I mean, this is, if you think about the life of a like expert in the inventory management and kind of bookkeeping side of things, like as we get closer to tax season here, like your life is going to get crazier. And so grateful for your time. So, all right, listen, we're going to dive into some pretty technical things here, Savannah. Obviously when your expertise is like, I am the czar of inventory reconciliations for an accounting firm. You live at the intersection of some pretty deep, nerdy pools, which is great. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get to that, but I want to get a little bit of your story. Would you mind giving, just for the sake of the audience here, Savannah's a real person, guys, like how you kind of arrived where you are now? Kind of give us the quick backstory.
Yeah, great. So my name's Savannah, like you said, Tyler. I graduated from the University of Georgia with my degree in accounting, and I actually joined Seller Accountant as a bookkeeper several years ago, and I kind of worked my way on some challenging bookkeeping clients and kind of found my love of operations and processes, in addition to the technical accounting side that I was able to actually get a lot of insight on while I was still a student in college. Once I graduated, I joined the onboarding team at Seller Accountant. So I was really seeing a lot of our most complicated clients because they're coming crazy messy and we're trying to get them to that point where they have a lot of visibility. And then from there, I kind of fell into this operations role. So I'm kind of currently overseeing that same onboarding team, our recurring bookkeeping team, which is what we'll talk a lot more about today. And then also our advisory service.
Love it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's Savannah, probably you're tempted to undersell it there. Savannah, like we've had the privilege of working with a lot of UGA students. I'm a bulldog. You guys know that. And Savannah, you know, you're like kind of the biggest home run for us, and that you've not only joined our team full time, but you've really then kind of earned your way onto our leadership team as a company. So really, honestly grateful for you. So we got to talk about something awkward here. Like nobody out there who's running their $1 million Amazon or Shopify business is like fundamentally excited about inventory reconciliations, right? That's a hard, what? Like for almost everyone out there. But I mean, can you speak to that a little bit? Like, why do you think that inventory reconciliations are so hard?
Yeah, so much like any topic in e-commerce accounting, my first thing to say is kind of the complexity of data. So especially with a lot of our clients who are operating from Amazon FBA to even having different types of warehousing. The reporting looks different everywhere. And then having multiple sales channels where sometimes those COGS are even different in each of the sales channels. And so normally the complexity of data alone can create some overwhelming and daunting feelings for our clients and for us actually too. And then the other thing that I would say is honestly just understanding what an inventory adjustment really is, or a reconciliation as you would call it. And kind of coming back to this big idea, I feel like a lot of clients get kind of protective of their COGS and they want to, you know, stand up and defend their systems. But really what we are really trying to do is compare apples to apples and actually true up your accounting system to match that actual count. And so sometimes even just wrapping your brain around that concept can be really challenging. And so a lot of the tips and stuff that we'll talk about today is actually just bringing it back to that simple fact where truing up the accounting system to account that you collected.
Yeah, you said that really, really well. I mean, guys, I think I mentioned this last week on the cost of goods sold episode, but like, I think it's easy for sellers that are even growing pretty quickly to think, geez, this should be so simple. Why can't I get this, right? I have 5 products for crying out loud. I only sell in 2 channels. Amazon does whatever percentage of my supply chain. Like, what the hell? Why is this so hard? And I just want to make you guys again just feel normal. Like, this is the deep end of the pool. This is the most challenging technical bit for, I mean, this is the reason firms like Seller Accountant exist. If this didn't exist, we wouldn't exist, because this is hard. And I think you said it really well. Like, it can be, it can almost create some defensiveness, right, with some of the sellers out there, because and so just know, if you ever talk to Savannah, by the way, she's like way nicer than I am. She's like, anybody in your accounting team, they're not attacking you. They're trying to help you get, you know, high fidelity, high accuracy in your numbers, because the stakes are high. And I mean, maybe just to speak on that really quick. I mean, you know, in your mind, what are some of the like consequences, or what's at stake in terms of getting inventory right in your accounting?
Yeah. So an inventory adjustment is the only way for us to validate your costing system. So even if you feel like you have the perfect costing list, this is the only way for us to actually validate how true that is. And then when you think about sellers making management decisions and hard decisions based off these numbers, even sometimes that communication gap between your perfect cost list and the accounting system can create inaccuracies in your reporting, which can make making decisions really challenging, especially if those change or they're really material sometimes, like we see.
Yeah, I was reviewing a balance sheet. So by the way, guys, if you've never taken a second to look at your balance sheet, it's really important. And you might be wondering yourself, why do they call it a balance sheet? Those ridiculous accountants. The reason is that it has to balance, right? Your balance sheet should be a part of your accounting that you can independently kind of verify, right? You should be able to go look at a spreadsheet or an inventory management system to see how much inventory you have or what your bank account balance was at a given date. And you should never trust the numbers in your profit and loss statement until you are fairly certain that your balance sheet is accurate. And so that's what, I completely agree with you there, Savannah. And one of the things we talked about in last week's episode was kind of the stakes are, you know, taxes are the kind of the small stake, profitability, cash flow. And then obviously we want to exit. And man, this is I'm throwing you kind of a curveball here, but like, can you speak to how challenging the inventory reconciliation can be in due diligence? Have you had any experience with guys who are trying to sell their businesses and how this can get kind of hairy?
Yeah, definitely. So one of my first clients actually, they were very complicated. You know, I think they had 5+ sales channels, multi-million dollars of inventory. And what you find going into due diligence is they're actually looking for that inventory reconciliation process to be done every single month. So very similar to how we hold standards to our balance, or like you said, our credit card balances or our bank balances, in due diligence, this is an expectation every single month. And so where we normally are doing quarterly adjustments, or we would at the very least recommend like a semi-annual adjustment, in due diligence, you should kind of plan and prepare to do those monthly.
Yeah, that's an important thing that we've even evolved on as a firm here a little bit. So just to reframe that, because I think that's really good. Like, most of our clients here at Seller Accountant, is it fair to say, Savannah, that we probably do quarterly adjustments for most of them? But if one of two things are true, one, if you're extremely large or complicated, like the seller you're describing, which was more than $20 million a year in revenue, 5 channels, I think they had something like 2,000 different SKUs. And that, if that level of complexity or volume is involved, you need to be looking at having a system that can reconcile every month. And then the second thing that you mentioned, Savannah, which is really important, as soon as you're kind of T-minus 6 months or so, or maybe at a bare minimum 3 months from going to market, where you're going to be under that intense scrutiny of a due diligence team. It's time to get this situated every single month, because the story, that the flip side of what you just said, is you and I had another client that joined us, also had a mess. We were also helping them clean up, but they wanted to go to market like yesterday. So we started doing the cleanup, and like 3 weeks later, they're on the market with what would have been, you know, a gigantic exit. But because of how difficult it was to get the inventory reconciled, they had a really challenging time getting through due diligence, and ultimately the deal fell apart for them. And so I think for us, or for me, just speaking on behalf of Savannah and her team, like, we can put a ton of pressure on Savannah and her team to reconcile your inventory. But if the data is bad in your system, like, it's going to be hard to reconcile, which is why you want to get ahead of it so that you can. And this just kind of goes to the fact that, hey, if I'm reconciling every month and I'm having adjustments, speak to that. Like, at what point is an adjustment one that you're concerned about versus one that you're like, meh, this is not really that big a deal. This is normal doing business.
Yeah. So we normally are looking for our inventory adjustments to be less than 5% of your actual inventory balance. So anything that's more than that, we usually are concerned. But the caveat I always give is, if you're pivoting to monthly adjustments, that materiality needs to be even smaller, because we're really looking for your cumulative, you know, year end balance. You don't want that to probably be 5% or more of your inventory balance.
Yeah, that makes sense. So like, I like that idea. The more you're investing in your process to have good inventory accounting, and the more months you've had of testing the validity of your system, the smaller and less material or less impactful those adjustments should be. But guys, be ready for a rude awakening. The first time you ever do an inventory adjustment, like, you've never done it. Have you ever actually, pop quiz here, have you ever had a brand new customer at seller accountant that's never done inventory adjustment that was just spot on, like, just like lucked into it?
No, I don't think so. It's always a mess the first time. The good thing is, once you work out what the problem was the first time, that's usually the hardest. And then after that, it gets a little easier every single time.
So this is great. This is actually a really natural pivot into, I think, the meat of our discussion today, Savannah, is there are basically two fundamental problems you can have with your inventory. And there may be a lot of underlying diagnoses you need to do. And so just want to kind of take those one at a time here. So, all right. You look at your balance sheet, right? I'm looking at my books, and I've just done a count of my inventory, and I count the inventory, and it says I have $100,000 in inventory. But then I look at my accounting system on my balance sheet, says I have more than that. I've got $120,000 of inventory. Like, can you explain what's happening in that situation or what might be going on?
Yeah. So there's a lot of different things that could be going on, and we have actually a resource to kind of help you guys go through some of the things we're going to talk about. But there are two places we're going to look. So the first place is at your actual inventory count, because a lot of times what we'll see is that you're actually missing an in-transit, is usually what we would call it. So if you were shipping inventory from a warehouse to a warehouse, and you took a count on a day before that inventory got there, there might be a chance you're missing some inventory that you own and you paid for. And so we would always check those counts first and just validate with you guys that you have counted all of the inventory, even everything that's on a boat, on a train, on a plane, anywhere. So that's the first place. The second place that we're going to look is actually within your accounting system. So there are a few things that can be happening if you're writing down inventory. And usually a lot of these things are just misclassifications, honestly. So we've either classified something in QBO, saying, or your accounting system saying that it's inventory when it really shouldn't be. We usually see this with inbound shipping is a common category that this happens in. So the client has not included this on their landed cost of goods sold list, but we're putting it in inventory on there. So again, we're not comparing apples to apples with our classifications and our landed cost list.
Yeah, that's one of the things, Savannah, just real quick. That's one thing I mentioned last week in the video, guys, is that apples to apples thing Savannah just said is really important. You have a lot of latitude under the IRS's regs to determine what you want to load versus not load into your inventory. But whatever you choose has to agree on both sides of the wheel. Whatever you're going to enter into the inventory asset needs to be the exact same variables that get kind of extricated from that inventory count as you sell the units. And an imbalance in those variables, to your point, Savannah, could make it to where you're not expensing enough each month and you're just keeping too much inventory. And now you've gotten to reconciliation, you've got too much. So I'm sorry, keep going. So we got too much inventory on our balance sheet and we're trying to find it, or we got to write it off, right?
Correct. Yeah. So the next scenario that we see really often is that we have something in QuickBooks classified as a purchase that has not been received yet. So this is essentially a deposit. And these are actually usually really easy to find. We're usually just, we would go right towards the last few days of the period that we're looking at. If there are any inventory purchases classified in there, you probably want to ask yourself, did I actually receive this? Is this showing up on that count that I took in the physical count there? So that's another really common category. And then to correct that, all you need to do is move that deposit to a deposits on inventory account, and it should true up right away usually.
Yeah, because that's really helpful. Like, so again, we're looking at our spreadsheet count, or we've actually gone to the warehouse or pulled the data out of Amazon or our 3PL. And then we're looking at QuickBooks and we're like, oh my gosh, where's the rest of this inventory, right? My accounting system says I should have a bunch. I only have a little. And I got to tell you, Savannah, there's no better feeling as an accountant or as somebody trying to reconcile their inventory than having the panic of feeling like you're missing like 20 grand of inventory.
Yeah.
Only to realize that you sent that deposit, that wire went to China the second to last day of the month, and it hasn't been received yet. And so good news, you don't have to write that down. Am I right? Am I saying that right? You Correct. Don't have to write that mm-hmm. down.
Okay. Correct. Yeah. You would just move it to a sub account of inventory usually is what we do just to denote that it hasn't been received yet.
Okay. Interesting. Anything else that you would say that would be helpful for somebody who realizes that they may be in a position of having to write down the inventory on their balance sheet?
Yeah. The last thing I would check is we're either missing COGS or we are understating the costs that we do have. So sometimes in terms of missing cost of goods sold, what I would recommend is not only the journal entries, but thinking about where these things are fulfilled. So going to e-commerce being really challenging, you can have Shopify being fulfilled by Amazon, you know, sometimes. And so if you're already accounting for FBA COGS, you might be already accounting for Shopify COGS. And so in an instance where you're not really careful about understanding where your units are actually being fulfilled from, there's a case where you could be overstating your cost of goods sold or understating by missing different channels. So I always recommend listing out all the channels where they're fulfilled and where we actually see that in your accounting system as a costing entry. And then for understating our current cost, I'm sure this kind of goes back to the last episode that you did, Tyler. If we see this a lot with estimates, if clients are using estimates for inbound shipping or tariffs, sometimes those estimates don't truly align with what we see on invoices, which can cause us to be like undervaluing what that SKU is actually worth compared to the invoice that we actually paid for it. So at that time, if we've expressed all other avenues, then we would kind of scrutinize the landed cost of goods sold list and compare that to invoices to make sure it kind of holds up.
Makes sense. So before we pivot to the other side of the coin here, right, you could have a situation where there's not enough inventory on your balance sheet. When you did the count, you got too much over there that you counted. I just want to mention that, Savannah, I really thank you for this, by the way. You put together a kind of a pretty simple one-page inventory troubleshooting guide. And I'm going to make sure, because some of this, you're like, okay, wait a minute. If it's this, then I need to go look at my landed cost of goods sold. Okay, wait a minute. But if it's this, I need to look at my deposits. Did I receive those? If you guys want to just look in the show notes for wherever you're seeing this episode, whether it's on the podcast or on YouTube, I'll just give you a link where you can have Savannah's little guide for free here. We're happy to share that with you. But okay, so this is a convenient time to pivot then to the opposite end of the coin. I went to the warehouse, I pulled the Amazon data, I compiled my spreadsheet, and now the spreadsheet says I've got $120,000 of inventory. But when I look at the accounting system, mm-hmm. the accounting system's only saying I have $100,000. In other words, I'm like looking like I have more than my accounting system says I actually have. Like, speak to that. What happens in your, or what are you seeing when you look at clients when this is the case?
Yeah. So a lot of times it's kind of the opposite of the same coin, like you're saying about the things we've already talked about. But the first thing that we're looking at is our classifications in QuickBooks Online. Again, going to inbound shipping. This is normally where we see this. So in that instance, usually our client is loading that inbound cost, but we have it classified on the profit and loss statement. And so we just need to essentially capitalize those things on the balance sheet and inventory. And that can happen with other things too. Like if you are including, you know, product packaging, some other things like that, that normally we don't see, it might just be, we need to move those things to inventory off of our profit and loss statement to kind of find that number.
Just to make sure you're not double expensing it. So this is the, when you realize that your inventory balance on your balance sheet is too low, it normally means you've been overexpensing something. Something has happened where you've overexpensed it. And like that's a similar great feeling to finding that deposit earlier.
Definitely.
So when you realize, oh, thank you, dear Jesus, that I've just been putting my inbound freight invoices directly onto my profit and loss statement. I forgot that I had to have an apples to apples loop, and I forgot to put them on the balance sheet. I just get to go reclassify 6 transactions and I'm good. Like, that's another great feeling, right?
Definitely. And you can see, going back to like what's at stake here, how that could be really hard for a client to swallow if they've been operating out of a place of fear or loss sometimes. I mean, it's a good thing to find money always, but if you knew that you had some of that wiggle room the whole year, it's really important to be doing these periodically so you can kind of find that early. The next thing that we normally are looking at is we've received something on our accounts that's not showing up in QuickBooks. So kind of the opposite of deposits is this AP to vendors. So where this can get really tricky is if you have really complicated terms with your inventory vendors. We've had some clients that are like, you just pay us when you can, which is wonderful for you guys and your cash flow, really challenging accounting wise. And so just making sure that if you have any inventory that has not been paid for yet, even if it's been, you know, it's not on strict terms, it always will need to be put in as an accounts payable on your books, or you'll never be able to reconcile that inventory balance.
No, that makes so much sense. And now most of us normal human beings out there don't have those, like, you know, sweet ass terms where it's like, pay us whenever you want. But it isn't uncommon, especially for the guys that are better at negotiating, to pay a 10% deposit and then they pay 40 or 50% when it leaves the port in China. And then they maybe don't have to pay the balance until net 30 days once it lands or something like that. And so that net 30 days is what she's calling AP, or accounts payable, where we need to make sure we grab that too. Like, that's a thing, right? Okay.
Definitely. Yeah. And then, the last thing, kind of going off the last thing we talked about before, was double counting our cost of goods sold. So rather than missing them, we're double counting them. We had one instance with a client where A2X, which I'm sure a lot of you guys are familiar with, there's where we can check a box that says include non-Amazon FBA COGS into that software. And so something as simple as that, it's counting Shopify COGS already in that journal entry we're sending over, but then we're doing a manual journal entry for Shopify cost of goods sold. So we've double counted COGS for that entire sales channel. And usually what you have to do is just go back and again, list out all those sales channels where they're being fulfilled and how we see it coming through in QuickBooks. And you might find any duplicates or double counting there.
Mm. Okay, so let's say, and this could be for either instance, but maybe to kind of put a bow on this, you've gone through Savannah's one-page troubleshooting guide. You sang a hallelujah because you found the major error. And I think I'm correct in saying this, but it almost is never going to be a zero adjustment, right? The reason they call this a true-up is that you're going to lose a unit here or there, or you're going to miss the timing of a receipt by 5 units. Mm-hmm. What do you, like, just quickly, the mechanics of actually doing the adjustment once you determine that you've solved all the major problems?
In terms of what the actual entry would look like?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But basically, you're just going to write it off. Like, I mean, just with confidence, or write it up or down, right?
Yeah. So I always just want to make sure that I've gone through everything, like I said, on that worksheet. And then once that's done, go ahead and book the adjustment. If it's more than that 5% materiality, we always recommend doing a count the next month. So usually you're going to need another count to validate that count was correct, especially if we see it's really material. So in the next month, if your materiality is almost 0%, then you know that there was just probably a beginning balance error somewhere that we just had to true up. And it can give you a lot of confidence in that value. If it's swinging the opposite direction, we know that we were missing some information somewhere. And so the only way you can really validate those is by the next count, and then making sure that adjustment is closer to zero, a lot closer to zero, to make sure that you have confidence in that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So think about this. If you have $100,000 of inventory that you own as a company, what Savannah is saying is, when you do your adjustment, if that adjustment's less than $5,000, you may not love it, but you just do it. Now, if it continues to be $5,000 every month in the same direction, again, there's probably something leaking in your boat. Something's wrong with your accounting system. Or what sometimes is common is that it was $5,000 one direction, then one month, and then the opposite direction the next month. And you realize, when Amazon actually receives my order, it was sitting on the damn loading dock in Chicago for 2 weeks, is really confusing. And so you'll find parts of the data in your system that are confusing. Every business is a little bit different, but just know there's a lot of data points that are confusing, which kind of leads me to, I think, a couple of final points I want to make here. You know, advice for stressed out sellers who are like bro or Savannah, like you're telling me to tolerate a $5,000 pile of noise in my accounting each month. Like if somebody wants to level up in a way that would allow them to get more precision, like what would that look like?
The one thing I always advocate for, especially for us being outsourced, is we don't understand the operations unless we're in there every day. And so as an owner, really empowering you to understand the operations of your inventory management system. And the more insight that you have into that, the better that you'll be able to speak to the data and find discrepancies in the data. So although it's a harder process, that's really the best advice that I could give is just being as involved in that process as you possibly can. And it will really give you a lot of knowledge is, you know, information is knowledge to troubleshoot those issues and feel confident in it.
Yeah, I had a client, a good friend of mine who's in my mastermind, and he decided to make inventory. Guy's got grad degrees, one of the smartest guys I've ever met. And he decided to make his full-time job inventory management for like a month. And he still had inventory management issues, but he learned so much to your points of, oh, I didn't realize that when that teammate was receiving, they weren't putting in the same system as this teammate who was doing the accounting. And just know, again, give yourself grace. This is hard. And one thing I might add to that, Savannah, is as your business gets larger or your catalog gets more complex, you may want to look at getting what's called a piece of software called an inventory management system. So you got to be careful here. Everyone needs to have an inventory management system in terms of the flow chart. Here's how I order. Here's how I pay. Here's how I receive. Here's how I calculate those things in that spreadsheet that Savannah and I were alluding to. But at some point, it may be time to level up and acknowledge that QuickBooks Online and Xero and these other accounting softwares are rotten inventory management tools on a SKU level. Right. I mean, at what point would you recommend someone closely looking at an IMS software to bring in?
Yeah, I think it depends on the value of inventory. I think like how much you're carrying and then really how many SKUs you have and honestly the time that you have to invest in it. So we always say at SellerConnect, garbage in, garbage out, just paying for the tool doesn't make it better. So once you're at a point where you're able to actually invest or have someone on your team invest in actually putting that process into a software system, that's when you're going to get the most use out of it. And we've seen really successful ones with very small catalogs and very large catalogs, really solely based on how they're able to understand the data and put it into the software tool.
So not that we're pitching anyone's tool out there, but I know you do this a lot. Do you have a couple that are kind of your current favorites right now that you've been leaning into?
Yeah, so my current favorite is Finale. So they actually have, I really love their like receiving process and the data is really easy to get to. And they actually calculate average cost of goods sold for you based on the kind of components that you tell them. So it will eliminate some of the need for those like spreadsheet calculations, which we found to be really helpful. So that's kind of my current favorite, but I've also worked with Sin7. I don't mind Sin7. Again, usually as long as the client knows that the data in there is correct and they can kind of stand behind it, I'm happy to get behind any of them, but I've just seen that Finale's UI is really easy to use and makes a lot of sense.
Okay. If we have a direct link to Finale, I'll put that in the show notes as well. Yeah. Just so you guys can check those guys out if you want to. They've been good partners for us. Okay. So final thought here. Savannah, we do this. First of all, before we go to my final thought, any final thoughts from you regarding inventory management and reconciliations?
I would just say it is daunting. And just to give you some reassurance that this is a really hard task, as many of your thoughts as you can get down on paper to sometimes like this big conceptual idea, putting it in actual numbers, helps a lot that I've found. So, right. Get it out of your head and on paper and it will help sometimes connect the dots.
So good. And again, guys, just remember, obviously this is what we do. So like you get to a point where now listen, you just started in 2023 and you're about to start your second year and you've got three products and you're doing $10,000 a month in revenue. You probably don't need to outsource this to a team to do this for you. You may want to use some of our free resources, reach out to us if we can help coach you and push you in the right direction. But as your company gets larger, the accuracy of these elements of your business become much more important, as we talked about, not just in terms of, I mean, how much would it rock your world if you all of a sudden, you've been looking at your P&L every month, you've been looking at your profit and loss, profit and loss, profit and loss, and then you realize at the end of the year that those numbers were complete BS because you weren't calculating your cost of goods sold and inventory correctly. That would be a game changer for you, because it would make you realize, either you'd be really happy or really sad, but it'd make you realize that you weren't operating your business truly based on the numbers. And so getting this right does matter. Obviously, if you need help, reach out to us. We'd love to help you with it. Final thought then, Savannah, is there a favorite habit or rhythm in your life that you would say gives you an unusual ROI for yourself?
Yeah, I love that question. I think for me, although I'm not amazing at it every day, my morning routine, I think helps me be so much more productive throughout the day and actually feel a lot better about myself. So just writing that down and trying to following it as often as possible has really made a huge difference for me.
Love it. Savannah, very much appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for joining Return on Podcast today. And then guys, for those of you who have made it here, you know, 30 minutes into this show, Savannah, I just want to thank you. This is your time is valuable, and we really hope that this content gives you some tools to help you do your inventory better. We're going to share a link to the inventory troubleshooting guide that Savannah has put together for us. Obviously, if it gets too deep for you to deal with, call us. We'd love to get involved and find a way to help you. But until we see you next week on Return on Podcast, thanks again for joining us today. Have a great week.